11:04 a.m. I'm Scott Simpson. Thanks for joining us on Maritime Morning. It's a beautiful Saturday. You might have been up early because you couldn't sleep in the heat and humidity, or maybe you are taking it easy today with a hot beverage, because I have heard that that's another way to beat the heat, by drinking hot tea. I don't get it. I've never been a hot beverage drinker. As you know, I like my cold drinks. Another way to enjoy a hot day is to get outside and enjoy some of the festivities around town. There are some festivals and such coming up. And also you can check the cheap showiness of nature augmented by humans reciting lines from someone who died years ago. To tell us more about this from Off the Leash, Halifax, let's visit with Jeremy Webb. How's your weekend going, Jeremy Webb?
My weekend is gloriously sunny and wonderful. How's yours, Scott Simpson?
Super hot and sweaty, mister.
I bet it is in that studio.
Always.
Yeah, this is why I phone in. I don't want to be in there with you.
Well, it's after the dog was here earlier, there's a fresh aroma in the room.
I bet there is.
Hey, all the better to be in the great outdoors this weekend.
This, you know, Halifax is, I think, the city that gives you the most pound per dollar, of entertainment, with the Jazz Fest, which I know you're talking a lot about, and just so much going on. And then this coming week, of course, we have the 26th annual Halifax Pride Festival, which is also starting up under the banner Your City, Your Pride.
It makes it sound like a civic pride festival just in that tagline, but there's so much more to it.
Well, there is civic pride because, you know, Halifax, I think, is a pretty open, glorious, accepting city culturally and sexually. There, I said it on the radio. I said culturally on the radio.
It's nice that after years of oppression, that culture is finally allowed to come out and wave its flag.
I know, and I want to thank Mike Savage, our current mayor, for helping with that. He's actually kicking off the Pride Festival on Thursday, this coming Thursday, by raising a flag and hosting a reception. So thanks, Mike Savage. That's at 5 o'clock in Grand Prairie, and it's free.
And that's something to show some civic pride in, that alone, because there are cities in this country, perhaps even the largest city in the country, where the mayor may not be so proud to be in the parade and around the events. Our mayor, stand-up guy, and is standing up.
Absolutely. And, you know, because you are the host of this radio show working for this radio station, you can't say that Rob Ford is a bit of an idiot for not supporting that sector of the community. But I'm a guest, and my opinions are my own and my own only, and the guy's a bit of an idiot. We don't have ourselves cursed with an idiot in office in that role, so it's great to see. You're absolutely right, although you did not in any way say that. The festival's been going for 26 years. This is the first year, actually, that I personally will be able to attend. I've been out of town working every summer, usually, and I miss it. So I'm really excited to take my family down. It's a family event. It's about inclusion. So I'll be dressing my young son, Samuel, up in the most rainbowy clothes I can, and we'll be taking in things like the Dykes and Divas softball game, which is on Sunday the 21st, next weekend. So I can't wait to see that. That's going to be a lot of fun.
That is always a highlight of the event. You get to see people in drag taking on people who, I'm not good at describing people sometimes.
You see, that's the danger, is that there is no stereotype, right? But you're right. Dykes versus Divas, there's going to be a lot of high heel shoes running around a ball field. I've seen photos every year in the newspapers, and they look like they're having a time of their lives, but they look very sweaty. And, you know, running in high-heeled shoes, let's be honest, is not an easy task. There's also, this is the thing that intrigues me, Friday, July 19th, next Friday, Cosmic Drag Queen Bingo.
Ooh.
Come on. Bingo and drag queens in the Forum in Halifax on Windsor Street.
Now, if you were to give a room full of drag queens the extra opportunity to use makeup that responds under blacklight, now you're talking. That's an event.
I get a feeling there's going to be a lot of bingo, bongo. What are those called? Those markers that they
dabbers,
use?
Dabbers.
What are they called?
Dabbers.
Dabbers.
Yes.
I'm sure the dabbers will be flying. I'm almost tempted to go to see whether I get dabbed myself.
You might.
I might. One
Jeremy,
can only hope.
Jeremy, you could use a little blush. Dab, dab.
Oh, thank you. There's lots going on. The parade, of course, is the big finish. Although, actually, things do happen on the Sunday afterwards as well. There's a picnic in Point Pleasant Park. But Sunday is the big event that I can't wait to see. What's great about this festival as well, at this time of festivals, is that there's lots of educational stuff. There are lectures. There are movies. There are songwriter circles. Actually, the songwriter circle looks really cool. It's hosted by Irish Maithan. This year's Songwriters Circle will also feature music and stories of Bria McKinnon, Rhea May, who I think is wonderful, and Jess Healy, and that's at the Company House on Gottingen Street. So I think this year the Pride Festival may be my festival of choice. I know that I'm going to be taking in a lot of the jazz festival this week leading up to Pride, and I can't wait to be down on the waterfront in the tent, but, you know, there's so much to choose from.
You know, I always find just the atmosphere in Pride is enough to move me to tears. Just whatever your bent is, whatever your personal thing is, you can just feel that much closer to letting it out if you haven't let it out yet.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the message. Let it out. They've got a theater festival as well called the Queer Acts Theater Festival. It's run for 5 years now as part of the Pride Fest. There are shows at the Bus Stop Theater from 6 to 11 all through the festival. Check it all out. The website address I should mention before I forget is halifaxpride.com. There's also a mobile app which is launched this month, the Halifax Pride mobile app, so you can just keep abreast, as it were, of all the information that you need for having a successful, fun Pride. The other thing we could say here is there's a party cruise on the Silver, on the tall ship Silver. It's the seventh time they've done this. What day is that? That's Wednesday, July 24th, from 10:30 at night till 12. $30 ticket will get you on a boat with everyone dancing and partying and a cash bar.
A cruise on the Silver is an excellent way to spend any night.
You know, going cruising on the cruise,
ooh,
would be fun. If I wasn't a happily married man, I'd be on that boat. But I'm not. I mean, I am, and so I'm not going to be. But it sounds like fun. And if the heat continues into the week, what a nice way to cool down and warm yourself up at the end of a night. So,
for sure.
Yeah, so there's lots going on. Pride Festival, that's one to check out. I also want to give a shout-out to Shakespeare by the Sea, who have had finally some sunshine over the last few days for their Snow White production, which we talked about last week.
Mm-hmm.
But they are opening their second show on Sunday evening, which is Hamlet, Prince of Denmark. That is the show, I think, of the season to go and see for them. Rhys Bevan-Jean, who I've worked with a number of times, is playing the titular role of the Prince of Denmark. And Stratford Festival veteran Ian Deacon, who is a very wonderful actor, is playing the nasty, evil King Claudius. They're supported by the whole company. That play, like all of Shakespeare by the Seas, is outdoors in Point Pleasant Park, but they do have an interior venue should rain stop play, as it did when they opened last weekend. But, you know, it's sunny, it's glorious, and what better way to enjoy Hamlet than sitting outside under the moonlight and the stars.
Oh, for sure. If you've never seen Hamlet done outdoors, or Shakespeare of any sort outdoors, it's a totally different feeling from being in a theater. The sound carries it a different way. You find yourself just mentally leaning forward a little bit to hear a bit better, and it draws you into the story that much more.
Yeah, I had the good fortune to work for Shakespeare by the Sea, oh my goodness, 3 or 4 years ago now. I played Iago in Othello, and I'm up on the battlements at the Battery, the Cambridge Battery, where they do their performances, literally standing on stone. The whole audience is below me, 300 people watching me do the soliloquy. There feels this kind of magic quality in the air, and I turn around in the middle of my scene, and I realize what everybody's staring at. Behind me is the biggest moon that you've ever seen, and I am silhouetted against the moon in the moonlight, delivering one of the most dramatic moments of my character's arc in the play. It was like somebody from above was the lighting designer on that show and created these special effects just for us. So the owls come flying through, bats occasionally, dogs, insects, you name it. You can go, you can take a picnic, you can enjoy something to drink and eat while you watch Shakespeare's greatest play.
Can you give a quick plug to that thing that you put out in a news release this week? You not only your own show, Under Milkwood, in Wolfville, but the other fellow.
Yeah, Stuff and Nonsense. It's a play. Actually, I'm producing it. I saw David Hughes a few weeks back. He's doing a physical theater show. It's a 45-minute physical theater show called Stuff and Nonsense. It's a beautiful piece. He's done it before. And because I enjoyed it so much, and I love David Hughes, who's a veteran actor in this city, I've offered him the chance to perform his show at 11 o'clock in the morning, August 12th to 17th, at the Al Whittle Theater in Wolfville. Tickets are just $15 and $10 for children. It's ideal for kids. It's almost like a clown show. It's very vaudevillian. It's physical theater. A series of six or seven little vignettes, beautifully realized, directed by Karen Bassett. So they're going to put that show in for six shows, August 12th to 17th. So, yeah, thanks for the plug. I'm going to be playing at the same time as Under Milkwood in Wolfville.
Well, it looked like a lot of fun.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful show. I recommend it. And, you know, what a great way to spend a day, come up to Wolfville, see David's show in the morning, spend the afternoon pottering around the bookstores and the art galleries, and go up to Cape Split, and then come back down into the town and see Under Milkwood in the evening. So
sounds great.
It's Jeremy, a day out.
Enjoy your week. Have fun at Pride. Play safe and stay hydrated.
I'm going to stay so hydrated and so proud.
Yeah, just don't waste any of the water. That's Jeremy Webb from offtheleash.ca. Off the Leash HFX on Twitter. Yeah, that thing about not wasting water, of course, is about they're doing some water main repairs in Halifax, and there's enough water to go around as long as we don't waste any, and if we end up using too much, they'll use the backup water supply, which means we'll all have to boil our water, and what a big headache that would be. Nobody wants to be boiling anything in weather like this. You know, we've talked a lot this show about not putting your dog in the car when it's too hot, and not putting your children in the car when it's too hot. I don't want to feel like we're, you know, being mean to cars. So let's talk about being nice to cars. How to keep your car happy when it's this hot, next on Maritime Morning. It's 11:20 in the morning on Saturday. Thanks for being with Maritime Morning. I'm Scott Simpson. Feel very proud to be able to be part of your life today. Let's talk cars. You know, we often hear in the wintertime that there are special precautions you need to take. You need to get your winter tires on and keep your windshield washer fluid topped up, and the things you need to do to make sure your car is happy for the winter. But hey, it's summertime, and frankly, the temperatures are getting a little extreme for my liking. Maybe there's something we need to do for our cars in the summer, too. Gary Howard is VP of Marketing and Communications for CAA Atlantic. Thanks for being on the show today, Gary.
Oh, my pleasure, Scott.
Where should we start? Is there anything that is a must do to keep the car in working order in the summer?
Well, the real key is through the summer, like you said, through the winter, is preventative maintenance. So make sure that your vehicle gets a couple of really good thorough checkups every year. And we do recommend that coming into the summer season is one of those time periods. So one of the things that you're going to want to look at first is your battery. And some people are surprised by that. They think batteries only fail in the winter. But heat can also have an impact. And the age of a battery, if it's between 3 and 5 years, you really should have it tested and replaced if necessary.
Ooh, yeah, no, I've got a... My car is like a 2005, and I've never changed the battery. I'm surprised it still works then.
Oh, you probably do.
Yeah, well, especially since my car has a slight defect that even when I've shut the lights off and pulled the key out, the lights stay on. So I've run down to nothing a couple times.
That's a very old battery. You've been very fortunate.
Oh, good. Well, I'm courting disaster.
But now that we've talked about it, you know it's not going to work when you go home.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm going to have to. I'll be out in the heat looking for a boost. The cooling system.
Yep, the cooling system works throughout the entire vehicle. It's not just the fluids, but you know, the engine casings and the tubing and everything. It just really keeps everything at proper temperature. And days like this, it's even more important. So again, having your fluids and fittings and tubings and pipes and everything checked ahead of days like this, that makes a big difference. And engine fluids obviously have to be checked in terms of top-ups and replacements and so on. So have those checked on a regular basis.
I know that hot air tends to expand and take up more space than cold air, which leads me to wonder, are my tires going to blow up from being in the heat?
Yeah, it's this is where the rubber hits the road, so to speak, and the inflation on your tires will change with the temperature. So colder is less, and hotter is more. So it's really important to ensure that you're checking your tire pressure throughout the year. Now, in the summer months, check the pressure when the car or the tires are cooled down, because you could get a false negative if you check it after they're hot. You'll get a false reading. So just make sure that you're going with the manufacturer's recommended tire pressure and not a little bit less or a little bit more. Just go with their recommendation. They know what the vehicle is supposed to be operating at.
Now, where do I find that number? I've heard conflicting things. Some say on the tire. Some would maybe say on the inside of the door frame.
Well, if the tires came with the vehicle, so the original equipment manufacturer, then yes, it would be inside the door frame. But if they're replacement tires, you might also want to check with the provider who provided those tires, because they can vary slightly. So just make sure that you're using the right directions.
Okay. Engine fluids, I see mentioned in a list here.
Yeah.
Is that something every driver should know? Like what fluids they need to check, or is this something I can just let the pros do?
You know what? Have you opened the hood of your vehicle lately? Because I did the other
lately?
Day.
Lately? Ever?
yeah. Well, all it is a great big block. You know, it used to be you could see all the parts, but now it's just all in a casing. So, I mean, I can check a few things, but not very much. And, you know, you've got brake fluids and air conditioning fluids and all kinds of different things that I generally just try and leave it to the pros. But, you know, definitely keep an eye on oil and conditioning systems.
I know that we live in the kind of country where if you are ill-prepared for the weather, it can be fatal. In the winter, you can freeze to death. In the summer, we've discussed extensively on the show today the dangers of living beings overheating. So air conditioning, in some cases, is more than a luxury.
It is, and especially if you're traveling with younger or older people or pets. Air conditioning in a vehicle, if you do notice that it's just not working as hard as it used to, you might want to have that checked as well. You know, we went for a drive yesterday just to cool off and get inside the vehicle. So, I will tell you this, air conditioning will add more fuel consumption, so it will be a bit of a drag on your fuel, but I don't think you can really go without at this time of year.
Some good advice there, sir.
And if you do break down, make sure you have a good emergency kit inside your vehicle as well, Scott.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And don't be afraid to call the CAA.
You bet. We're here.
Gary, thanks for being on the show today.
It was great chatting.
Yeah, you bet. Gary you Howard bet. Is the VP of Marketing and Communications with CAA Atlantic, and I believe he joined us from New Brunswick today. One little note I want to pass on. You want to be a little know-it-all? I mean, obviously that's sort of my cup of tea, and I apologize if it's not flattering. But here's a little trick. This is from lifehacker.com, and if you follow me on Twitter, you've been seeing me tweeting some links from Lifehacker today, because it's a really cool website. It teaches you how to do some neat tricks that make your life easier. This article is from a couple of years ago, and I've always remembered it. It's called Cool Down a Scorching Car as Quickly as Possible. And even if you've got window tints and those fancy reflecting shades, but parking your car in the sun turns it into a blast furnace pretty quickly. So here's a 6-step process to cool your car down as fast as possible, all right? First, roll down the windows, all the windows. Get all the windows rolled down. Then turn on the AC on the fresh air setting. Turn on the air conditioning. Don't use the recirculate thing. Crank the fan all the way up,
on the coldest setting. So drive around for a minute or two then with the windows open to get the blast furnace kind of air out of your car. Once the air inside your car starts to feel cooler than the outside air, roll the windows back up and then switch the air conditioner from fresh air to recirculate. So you're recirculating the air that is now cooler than the outside air. And then you can, lower the settings of the fan and the thermostat a little bit. So your car is cooler than anybody else around you. Again, those steps, roll down the window, turn the AC on, blast, like full blast. Crank up the fan all the way. Drive with the windows down for a couple minutes to get the super hot air out of your car. Once the air inside the car starts to feel like it's coming out cooler than the outside air, roll the windows back up and switch to recirculate. And then you can adjust to the temperature you like. That's the goal. You got it done fast. That works even if your air conditioner's a little bit broken. If it is a little bit broken, you should get that fixed. Health next. Everybody talks about breast cancer. Breast cancer is an important thing to talk about. Not enough people are talking about ovarian cancer. But some people started doing so this week when they heard that actor Pierce Brosnan's daughter died of ovarian cancer. And that woman's mother. Information for the woman in your life. Coming up next on Maritime Morning. 11:32 on a hot day in the Maritimes. One more tip. Just before the news, I gave you a little tip from Lifehacker about how to rapidly cool down your vehicle on a hot, hot day when you get in and it's super, super hot and you want the air conditioning to work as fast as possible. Gave you some tips there. If you missed it, hey, you can re-listen on our website anytime. But here's a tip. If you ever get in your car and find the steering wheel or gear shift just too hot to touch, I noticed this yesterday. I thought, I could have sworn I read a tip at some point about this. Well, this is a tip from a few years ago in the same article as the How to Cool Down a Scorching Car. A user named Jason Fitzpatrick wrote that you should carry a bottle of water and a small towel or rag in your car. If you wet the rag and wring it out and then wipe down the wheel and the gear shift and the brake lever or whatever, evaporative cooling will drastically reduce the surface temperature in just a few seconds. If it's still too hot, do it again. It doesn't take much water. Like carrying a small drinking bottle of water is fine. So you're probably thinking, the water's been sitting in the hot car, dummy. It's too hot. Doesn't matter. It might even work better because the hot water might evaporate faster. I don't know. Somebody might challenge me on that. But all that matters is the water is evaporating. And that evaporative effect will cool down the steering wheel. So I might try that. I think there's an old bottle of water in the car. Even if it's hot, it'll still work. Okay, so I've been learning a lot about ovarian cancer in the past few months. Doctors discovered cancer in my wife Amanda during the birth of our son 3 months ago. They figured out it was ovarian in origin and had spread. She's had chemo. She's having a radical hysterectomy later this week. More intense chemo in the months to come. So I've had a crash course in ovarian cancer, and it's been enough to make me wonder why so few people are talking about it. We have learned, obviously, as a society, that when celebrities experience something, people talk about it. Right? Well, this week, Pierce Brosnan's daughter was revealed to have died from ovarian cancer. She was 41 years old when she died in London at the end of June. She had been fighting the disease for 3 years. Now, Pierce Brosnan's first wife, Cassandra Harris, Charlotte's mother, also died from ovarian cancer. And her mother. So, there's a genetic component, you say. Interesting. One of those things that people just don't know. A person who approached me to talk about this on the show is Emily Chason, Regional Manager of Ovarian Cancer Canada. Nice to finally talk to you, Emily.
Hi, nice to talk to you too.
So when I heard about this, I said, absolutely, let's get this on the show and let's talk about it, because I've mentioned, my family situation once or twice in the show, but not in great depth, because this show's not about me, it's about everybody else, and that's fine. You brought this up and thought it would be a good entryway to talk about, and I couldn't think of other people who had ovarian cancer beyond these women, but you mentioned a bunch. Tell us about these people.
Yeah, and it's funny. Yesterday, Katie Couric did a show on ovarian cancer. I don't know if it spurred from the whole, Pierce Brosnan situation. But there was somebody else on there that I didn't realize had ovarian cancer, too. Her name's Shannon Miller, and she was one of the Olympic athlete gymnasts from the States, one of the, what do they call them, like the Power 7 or something like that. They all won gold. And she had it right after she gave birth, kind of the same thing. She was feeling bloated and had, you know, just some sort of very vague symptoms. Uh-huh. Went to her doctor, and they found ovarian cancer in her, and she had chemo and everything, and she's been healthy now since 2010, which is awesome. But some of the other people that have had it, Kathy Bates had it a few years ago.
Kathy Bates, actress.
Yeah, she kept it very under wraps. She was filming in Europe when it happened, and she had treatment, and she's been healthy since then. Martin Short's wife died of it just a few years ago. He's a Canadian actor, obviously, who we all know. And he was very sort of quiet about it, so it didn't create much in terms of news from him. And I'm trying to think of the others that I had sent you off the top of my head here.
Gilda Radner.
Oh, of course.
Of course.
Gilda Radner, yeah. She did a ton of work in terms of promoting knowledge on ovarian cancer, and she... you know, has a book or numerous books, and then there's the Gilda's Clubs. So she did a lot of work promoting awareness of ovarian cancer.
You mentioned Elizabeth Manley.
Elizabeth Manley's mother, yeah.
Elizabeth Manley's mother.
Yeah.
Okay, because I've known Elizabeth Manley in the news from she's done a lot of talking about mental health issues.
Yes. Yeah, and her mom died from ovarian cancer. And
okay.
Actually was a Canadian spokesperson for us for a few years because, you know, around the time that her mom passed away, it was, you know, when she was a well-known person in Canada. But she does a lot of work for a lot of different organizations, so, as you mentioned, mental health and whatnot. So she isn't our spokesperson anymore, but she's still very involved in our Ottawa Walk of Hope. Angelina Jolie's mother, she died from ovarian cancer, and recently with the whole talk of her having the, having her breasts removed, the conversation very much revolved around breast cancer, but it was actually ovarian cancer that her mom died from, and Angelina Jolie does plan to have a hysterectomy, but problem is obviously when you have a hysterectomy that you can't have any more children. And she wants to have another baby, so she's going to be monitored until that happens.
Okay, well, let's talk about that then, because one reason that Angelina Jolie decided to have the double mastectomy was because of a genetic component. Tell me what you know about the genes involved and the relationship between breast cancer and ovarian cancer then.
Yeah, well, there is a gene that they've discovered. It's called a BRCA gene. That if you're a carrier of it, it does make you more likely to have certain cancers, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, uterine, colon cancers. So if you had, let's say your mother had breast cancer and it was premenopausal especially, that makes a big difference in terms of the genetic connection. And then perhaps her mother also, as in the case of Pierce Brosnan's loved ones, that, you know, perhaps there can be a connection there. So a woman would have to get genetic testing done. And I know that when the Angelina Jolie discussion came up, I've heard that hospitals all over the genetic departments were just inundated with requests. But really, it's only something you have to worry about if you have a family history of it. And the big thing we just tell people is to just talk to your doctor about those things and know your family history. Because in the past, I think what happened a lot of times is people didn't even necessarily know sometimes what type of cancer their mother died from. Because with ovarian cancer, where it often sometimes is diagnosed late, it's already spread to other organs in the body. I remember being a kid and hearing, oh, she was just full of cancer. That would be sort of the diagnosis on
sure.
it.
Sure.
You know, so perhaps people didn't even know what their family history was. But now... healthcare is so sophisticated that people do have a better idea of what happened with their relatives.
Well, that's part of the thing is, say somebody dies and they check them out and they find them full of cancer. Years ago, they might not have checked what kind of cancer that was, or they might not have known that it mattered.
Yeah.
In my family's case, they found my wife full of cancer. At the time, they said, we don't know where this is from. If it's ovarian cancer, you treat it one way. If it's colon cancer, you might use a different treatment, and so on. So they might not have checked that. So knowing family history, yeah, people might not even have access to that family history.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, the big thing with ovarian cancer, too, is as of right now, most ovarian cancer does happen for no known reason, i.e. you don't have a family history of it. Your mom didn't have it. Your mom didn't have breast cancer, whatever that connection might be. So because they don't know what causes ovarian cancer, and it doesn't show its symptoms until it's typically in stage 3, stage 4 even. That's the super scary part about ovarian cancer. Because look at your wife. You're so excited. You're having a baby. And then, boom, you get this type of diagnosis.
Yeah.
So the big thing that we do at Ovarian Cancer Canada is we are actually the only charity in Canada that raises money to fund research and awareness and support for ovarian cancer. Because the big thing is, we need to find a screening test. So like the Pap test, the mammogram, colonoscopies, the PSA test, when people are screened early, obviously the cancer gets caught earlier, and at that point it's not nearly as complicated.
That's the thing is that currently there is no screening test. We'll talk about the symptoms after the break, but the screening tests different than a diagnostic test, I understand. Like a screening test, you might have a false positive, but you should never have a false negative. It's the kind of thing that will lead to further testing. Do I understand that right?
Yeah. And right now there isn't an effective screening test. A lot of people have probably heard of a blood test called the CA125 blood test.
Yeah.
And I know Dr. Oz talks about ovarian cancer a lot, and he often mentions the CA125, but it's not an effective screening test for the general public. They do use it as a marker for women that have been diagnosed and when they're coming back for their checkups, because some women that have ovarian cancer don't have an elevated result from their CA125, but some women do because it picks up on a particular hormone.
Well, that's one thing that's been a big discussion around our house. My wife was full of cancer and her CA125 was normal.
Yeah.
If it's going to be really highly elevated, that might be something, but just because it's normal doesn't mean that you're clear.
That you're clear, yeah. That's why it can't be used to say, yes, this is what you have. They have to explore it further.
Well, in the absence of a screening test, we'll talk in a minute about what women can do to monitor their own health without scaring themselves, but to keep an eye on themselves. Can you stick around another few minutes?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you bet. We'll talk more with Emily Chason, Regional Manager of Ovarian Cancer Canada, in just a couple of minutes on Maritime Morning. Gilda Radner, Kathy Bates, Jessica Tandy, Martin Short's wife, Angelina Jolie's mother, Elizabeth Manley's mother, Pierce Brosnan's daughter, Pierce Brosnan's daughter's mother, Pierce Brosnan's daughter's mother's mother. Yes, they all died from... Well, no, all those people didn't die of ovarian cancer. Some of them are still alive. Well, that's some good news. There's more than one kind of ovarian cancer, I think. Emily Chason, Regional Manager, Ovarian Cancer Canada. Am I right about that?
Yeah, they are finding that there are different types of ovarian cancer. There's sort of some new research coming out now, just sort of to skim over that. Some of them will be, slow growing, stay in stage one, that type, and then others, which are the ones that typically show are, silent, and then they show up in stage 3, stage 4, and then they, different women have different responses to therapy, even though they may both be at the same stage, and they're realizing that can be because of the sort of type of ovarian cancer that they have.
And there's different, there's different cells in the ovaries, and those different cells
can spawn different kinds of cancers. And I also thought I'd researched some stuff that says a lot of ovarian cancers actually start in the fallopian tubes. So if people are going to have their tubes tied, might as well have the tubes taken out too.
Yeah, yeah, that's been some sort of exciting research that has happened in the last year, that they're saying that, ovarian cancer may actually start in the fallopian tube rather than in the ovary. So, like you said, if you were having a hysterectomy and you perhaps weren't having your ovaries taken out, you weren't having a full hysterectomy, that you could have the conversation with your doctor to take your fallopian tubes out as well, and then that would decrease your risk of getting ovarian cancer. It's certainly not like a standard procedure or anything as of yet, but it's just, like we just say, just to have the conversation, because most women don't have that knowledge, and so they may just, you know, do whatever the sort of flow of things is. But if you've done some reading and you know about it, just to talk to your doctor.
Emily, one of the mantras seems to be in the cancer world: the sooner you catch it, the better. Very difficult to do with ovarian cancer because, as you've said, there is no screening test effect, no effective and available screening test for it. And that's one thing your organization is funding to try to make happen. In the interim, then, what can women do to keep an eye on their own health and well, hopefully not have it, but if they do have it, know about it?
Mm-hmm. Well, we do a program called Knowledge is Power, where I go out into corporate and public environments and educate well women and well men on ovarian cancer. Because of what you just said, there isn't a screening test, and in our surveys of the general public, awareness of it is really low on top of that. And on top of that, the symptoms of it mimic many other less serious conditions that when women read the symptoms, they get, you know, they say, oh my God, I have 5 to 6 of those symptoms in any week. So the most prevalent symptom is bloating. The second one being a pelvic or abdominal pain. And, you know, in the women that I talk to, some of them say it's a sharp pain, some it's a dull pain, some it's a shooting pain, some say it's a bubbling pain. So it's sort of unique to each person. And then there's also a frequent or urgent need for urination. And as well, that's if it's different from what you normally experience. That's the big thing, is that if it lasts for 3 weeks or longer and it's persistent and consistent. Lower back pain, change in bowel habits, fatigue. And another one that a lot of women say is they have a loss of appetite and or they feel full quickly, they have difficulty eating. And then as well, there's a change in weight, whether it be a weight gain or a weight loss. And with women, during menopause, many of those symptoms show themselves. And so women don't go right away saying, oh my gosh, I think there's something really, really wrong, when in fact there's probably 5 or 6 or 7 other things that you could maybe treat over the counter that they think it is. And a lot of women go to their doctor about it, and because ovarian cancer does mimic many other things, it's a very tough diagnosis to make.
And because when you run down those list of symptoms, if you're pregnant, you have all of those things anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And fortunately, sometimes, and it's such a weird thing to say fortunately, but sometimes with younger women, that is when they do get diagnosed, is when they're pregnant, and therefore they're having an ultrasound or they're having their baby, you know, whatever it is, that they get that ultrasound or, you know, have a C-section and the doctor sees something. And sometimes in those cases, they may get diagnosed earlier because of that, because sometimes those symptoms may not even be there at that point.
What are some of the risk factors? We've talked about the symptoms. What are some of the risk factors that can make a woman more likely to develop ovarian cancer? Something well, they can do some self, not necessarily some self-screening, but at least be aware of.
Yeah. Well, what we talked about earlier is having a genetic disposition to it. So knowing your family history. So if there's a history of breast, colon, uterine, ovarian cancers, never having children, never having breastfed, not taking birth control, And that's just due to all those reasons, is that you would ovulate every month for your entire life once you, you know, start your period until menopause. So that perhaps during that time there could be a mutation, like a tear in a cell wall, that could happen.
So the more you ovulate, the more you raise the risk.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So lowering the risk factors are having a baby, breastfeeding, taking birth control. And then as well, just sort of the general one is that, you know, the older you get,
yeah,
the higher the increase. But, you know, it's in our stats that we show, we say, you know, roughly 60% of the cases are between the ages of 50 and 79. But there's not that many women over 79 that get ovarian cancer. So really, you know, there's a significant number of women that are under 50 that get ovarian cancer. So it's really not an older person's disease. Like you hear that sometimes, that people will say, oh, well, you get that when you're older.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really not. It's very common in women that are premenopausal.
And I think the one thing that will surprise people that we haven't covered is how lethal it is. People do an awful lot of talking about some other cancers, breast cancer included, but the survivability of ovarian cancer is a lot less than breast cancer, I understand.
Yeah, and that's one of the main reasons why there aren't a lot of people talking about it, is because sadly, most of the women that get ovarian cancer, you know, die as a result of the disease. So, you know, we don't have that, you know, parade of champions saying, this happened to me, you need to know about it. Let's create discussion. Let's create awareness of it, because, you know, about 80% of the women that get it don't survive at 5 years. So what they have left is devastated husbands and friends and children, that, you know, their mom went from being a healthy woman that maybe had some bloating and gas perhaps, and then all of a sudden got a diagnosis of ovarian cancer.
And within a few years, she was gone.
A really scary disease.
Yep. Emily, thanks for bringing this to us. Is there anything else about this that you absolutely want to get out today?
Yeah, well, I just think that, you know, for anybody that has ovarian cancer or had it or has been affected by it, to reach out to our office. I'm in downtown Halifax, and we have lots of resources and support systems. And in September, which is Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month, we have a really big event here on the second Sunday in September, September 8th. It's our annual Walk of Hope. And last year, it raised just short of $3 million across Canada. And we've got great momentum in Halifax. The event has grown a lot in the last few years, and it's just a really positive, uplifting event that, although we just said, you know, most women don't beat it, but there still is that hope. And I think that's what really resonates on that day with the women that are there that have been affected, with their families. And I think that's really important, to meet other people that have been through the same thing and know that there is hope. So I think that's what I'd like to say about anybody. And just to go to our website, learn about it. And what I say, the biggest thing you can do for us is tell other women what you've learned. Because when you educate a woman, you educate a village.
Good point. Word of mouth is some of the best information you can put out there. Emily, you can bet I'll talk to you again in September if I don't speak to you again before that.
Awesome. Thanks, Scott.
Have an excellent week, and thanks for being on the show.
You too.
Emily Chason is the regional manager of Ovarian Cancer Canada. You can find them on the internet and Twitter. The web and Twitter. Thanks for being with us. I think that was a very informative and entertaining show, and I apologize if I bothered anyone with my complaint about the heat. I'm not looking forward to going out into it. I wish I could stay in this air-conditioned office all day long with my chilly little toes. Thanks to Jen McNeil for being our producer this week, lining up a great show. We'll be back tomorrow with a brand new episode at 9 till 11. And after that, Nikki Jabor with The Weekend Gardener. Be safe out there and check the back seat. Make sure there's nothing living in the back seat.